All right. This is Lena Evers Hillstrom. I'm interviewing Scott. Is your last name pronounced Buffler?
Buffler.
Buffler. For the UW Oral History project on restructuring. Scott, could you say your name and then spell out your last name?
Yes, Scott Buffler, Buffler.
Okay, looks like the sound is good. All right, so my first question is, what brought you to the UW colleges?
What brought me to the UW colleges?
Yeah.
I came to the UW colleges in the fall of 2000, and I was involved in the technology industry at the time, and I had recently moved to Wausau, Wisconsin, and a position became available at the UW Marathon campus in the area of instructional technology and distance education, and it just seemed like an interesting field and an interesting job, and so I applied for it and was offered the position, and that's how it all started.
All right, and what was sort of your trajectory with the colleges after that, and how long did you hold your position before restructuring started?
Okay, and just to clarify, when you talk about restructuring, there were actually several, kind of restructurings. Are you referring to the restructuring of the colleges to its regional model, or are you referring to the restructuring of the actual the phasing out of the colleges and extension?
I have kind of used that term as both. The phasing out of the colleges and then the movement into branch campuses.
Okay.
If you want to clarify how you're using that term,
okay.
Feel free.
Okay. So, but basically the question was what was my career path throughout my entire time at the colleges, or just during that period of restructuring?
Both, whatever you want to talk about.
All right. So I started as an instructional technologist, and I was responsible for management of the distance education and instructional technology program just at the Wausau campus. And then the next step on my journey was a partial appointment to the campus and then to the central office of the UW colleges at the time, that's when colleges and extension were still separate institutions. And then after that, in roughly 2008, I believe, I became the program manager for the UW College's distance education program. It was called the NODE program at the time, non-online distance education. And I did that for several years, and then when the first major restructuring happened, when the colleges became regionalized, I became the director of the Office of Distance Learning, which involved being the supervisor for all of the repurposed distance education positions at each of the 13 UW colleges campuses. And I continued in that role all the way up through the very end of the our restructuring, and then the merger, which happened after that. And I was, my last day in that position was June 30th of last year, in an interim position, and I'm now an employee of UW Shared Services.
Could you say a little bit about the NODE program and what that entailed?
Sure. So the NODE, or the non-online distance education program, started out in the UW colleges. It has actually existed, I believe, As an official program, it started in the late 1990s, and there were basically it was an initiative to allow the college's campuses to share curriculum, and specifically to share curriculum that wasn't available at each of the two-year campuses. Some of them are or were, you know, quite small, and not every campus had faculty in every discipline that was able to teach the full necessary curriculum. So the decision was made to try and share curriculum between the campuses in order to, you know, meet enrollment minimums or share resources that weren't locally available, and but not in an online course fashion, you know, asynchronous. So the NODE program shared the curriculum across multiple campuses, but the courses were delivered in a live synchronous fashion. And so over the years, there were video conference facilities and web conference facilities built at each of the 13 campuses were in order to deliver the courses. So an example would be, you might have a course that was taught from the Richland Center campus in physics, and you might have five or six other campuses that were all connected real time. And collectively, those five or six campuses would have a course cap that would be the equivalent of like one single face-to-face class. So it allowed us to deliver a lot of the things that we needed for the associate's degree, and then a lot of the things that we needed to help supplement the collaborative degrees, mainly in areas of things like engineering, world languages, higher level computer science, higher level math, things like that, where they wouldn't be able to offer a face-to-face equivalent. So each year a curriculum was built, and there a staffing model was built, and the technology was secured, and the courses were then delivered, and we had local technology and academic support for the students at the sites where the instructor was not. And that continued up through right up until the end of the restructuring. We were still delivering courses as late as it would have been spring of 2019, I believe.
So, between that and then regionalization, you said that your role changed.
Correct.
Could you expand on that? Did regionalization impact you, how you did work in any way?
It did pretty significantly. The restructuring and the regionalization was, it was an exercise in efficiencies, and it was an exercise in reducing budget lines, even though that maybe wasn't the publicly stated objective. That it was a necessary, there were certain amounts of funds that needed to be cut from each individual budget. So the budget that we had was reduced, and so we needed to completely redo the staffing model that we had. There was initial talk of potentially regionalizing some of the positions that did the support for our distance education, but after further review, it was found that that just was not possible because of the need for people at each location. So we ended up actually reducing the appointment across the board from a full-time equivalent at each campus to a 0.75 FTE equivalent, and that since those individuals were the only individual providing those services, it just basically reduced the amount of services we had to offer. So I became the supervisor of all those individuals, and it made the job of allocating our resources even much more, you know, important to only be able to do, you know, three-quarter time work on each campus. So we needed to reduce the hours of the, you know, times that the courses were offered, for example, sometimes the number of courses that were offered because of the, you know, need for support in the facilities. And it also reduced the availability of academic support for students and, you know, things like exam proctoring and technology training and things of that nature. So that was probably the biggest change, is that we really, you know, had to redo our entire budget or do our entire staffing model, and it's still attempting to deliver the same level of coursework.
What were people's reactions to that?
Well, so there were 13 individuals that were in the position of providing that support prior to the merger, and they, you know, they were given the option to retain the 0.75 position, and actually, surprisingly, the majority of them did stay, even with having to take a pay cut and an appointment cut. I think there were, I believe that there were nine of the 13 chose to stay, or someone else from the campus chose to stay in that position without us having to actually do a full search. So we were one of the few groups, because there were other groups that had to go through similar exercises, and many of them, you know, had a lot, much higher rate of attrition. But I think the fact that we had been a group that had worked together for so many years, that the dedication was there, and I think it was just a, you know, a really good core group of people. So from that standpoint, that was, you know, that was sort of a negative. And then from the faculty and the student standpoints, the reduced flexibility for, you know, being able to do classes at night, for example. We weren't able to do as many night classes without as much support. And some of our collaborative degree programs did a lot of their courses at night. So, you know, it was not, you know, good for anyone in those programs, because we just simply didn't have enough, we didn't have the resources to offer as many courses as they wanted to offer.
Yeah, and you mentioned that it was still important to have people physically at campuses.
Correct.
Could you expand on that?
Right, so the nature of these courses is that they are synchronous. Mm-hmm. So, meaning that, you know, all of the people that are participating in the course are sitting in a, you know, a facility of some kind, and there's some type of a connection between all of the facilities via video and audio, so everyone can hear, you know, what's happening all at once. And that type of synchronous delivery, from a technology standpoint, just has a higher level of support requirements than an online class would, for example, where it's asynchronous, you know, and you're not logged in real time. And so there's that component for just, you know, the technology side of things. And then also these types of courses many times utilize things like proctored exams or quizzes or, you know, local support for the academic side of the course as well. And, you know, proctoring is, you know, like an example of something that, you know, it's difficult, very difficult, if not impossible, to do at a distance. So there were many components of synchronous course delivery that just did not work well without local, you know, individual bodies there to help out.
And with things like the collaborative degrees, could you maybe expand on that and how the degree structure was sort of related to the colleges themselves?
Sure. There were a lot of them, and there were many different models, but I think the general overarching similarity is that most of them were considered as a program where they would start their education at one of the two-year campuses, and then continue the, you know, so the first 2 years would be based on a college campus, and then the second 2 years would be via some type of distance education, but allowing the student to stay in the community that the you know, the branch campus or the two-year campus was located. So just start thinking, like, at the UW Marathon campus where I worked, you know, there were UW Platteville had a collaborative engineering program. Oshkosh had a collaborative nursing program. Oshkosh also had it was a social work and can't remember the other component of that program, but Eau Claire had a nursing program for a while. Madison has their physician's assistant program. So in just about every case, you know, the plan was that it was kind of like a two and two. So it's like, I'm from the Wausau area or, you know, central Wisconsin, and I want to get a degree in engineering. So they would take their, you know, regular freshman and sophomore curriculum at a campus locally, and then as they progress into their junior and senior year, some of the curriculum could still be delivered locally at the branch campus or the two-year campus, or it would be delivered via some type of distance ed. But it was a, you know, beginning to end program. They would sign up, you know, get your best start here was one of the terms that was used over the years, I remember. So many of them were structured in that same way. So it was to keep the people, you know, give them the ability to get the degree locally, and also to help the, you know, reduce the cost of the degree, since the first 2 years tuition were, you know, sometimes significantly less than what they would be paying for those 2 years at Madison or comprehensive.
So what sort of went into, like, helping develop curriculum for those sorts of programs?
Well, for our program, the NODE program, you know, we looked at our first priority was always the associate's degree of the UW colleges. So the collaborative degrees were always a supplemental part of our program, but our main focus of the NODE program was to, you know, aid students in acquiring the associate's degree that the colleges offered. And so and especially at some of the smaller campuses, it was not always possible to, you know, to know or to get those courses offered locally. So our curriculum development process actually started even earlier than the on-campus curriculum development process, because they built theirs, you know, around ours. And we worked generally with all of the academic departments. They were the ones that are the, you know, the subject matter experts in curriculum and what's needed, you know, for their, you know, their portion of the degree. So we would generally begin there, and then we would then look at, you know, what are the collaborations we're involved with and what are their needs. And in every instance I can remember, there were always a lot more needs than we had the resources to deliver. So we had to, you know, use a ranking process to, you know, sort of look at our priorities every time we'd get a course request. And, you know, even within our associate's degree program, there were usually more requests to teach courses than we had spots available. So it was a pretty competitive process.
Could you maybe expand on that? Like, what were the needs that couldn't be met, and, like, why?
Well, for the synchronous courses, one of the biggest limiting factors was that, you know, they're reliant on facilities, you know, so we only had so many classrooms, and they were, you know, not a traditional classroom that you couldn't just use any classroom. There, you know, some specialized equipment needed to be installed in those classrooms to allow for that live sharing. And over the years, the cost of those building those classrooms did go down, you know, quite significantly because technology is always improving. But you still only had a limited number of them at each particular campus. So there's only so many hours in the day, and eventually the classrooms would just fill up, and you didn't have any more space to offer any of the courses. So one of the things that we did to try to accommodate that over the years was to start teaching in a hybrid course format. So we would do part of the class synchronously and then part of the class asynchronously. So an example would be if you have a Tuesday, Thursday, 9 o'clock till 10:50 time slot. If you're doing the entire class synchronously, you're only able to offer one class in that time slot, where if you do it in a hybrid format, you can have one class that meets synchronously on Tuesday and then another one that meets synchronously on Thursday. And then in between, they're doing some type of, learning management system based activity or other online activity. But then you're able to still get, you're basically doubling up on that time slot in the course timetable.
Mm-hmm. So I guess you said that you would talk with subject matter experts, and that really the main focus of Node was the associate's degree.
Correct.
How does that work with what the structures of the UW colleges were? Because from my understanding, there would be one history department, but it would be across campuses.
That's correct.
So how do you work with faculty and other people who would be delivering those courses in that model?
Right. So that's the way you explain it is exactly right. So in the original UW colleges and the restructured UW colleges, academic departments were a collective of all 13 campuses combined together. So what we would do when we built our curriculum is we would basically work with the department chairs, and the department chairs were responsible for, being the subject matter experts. They were the ones that were aware of where all their faculty are, which campuses they were at, and which ones are, the best equipped to teach all of the different courses that need to be offered. So we would generally every year start with them and say, okay, what are the courses that you want to continue to offer, and are there new courses that need to be offered? And then work with them to determine, who would be the best person to teach it and where are they. And in general, we didn't have a lot of capacity to add new courses, so our new course proposal guidelines were generally that if you're going to add a class for your department, you're probably going to have to take something out. So, when we would ask for proposals, that we would also ask them, what are your priorities? So, if your department has four sections this semester, which ones are the most important? And if you're asking to add something, is there anything we can take out? And so it was a pretty long process. We would work with the department chairs, and we generally have a lot more requests come in than we had capacity, and so after the chairs had reviewed everything, then it would go to, we actually had an advisory committee, which was the director, myself, and there were some student services, administrative staff, and faculty on that committee, and then we would generally go through and end up, sometimes we'd have to rank them and just look at what needs is this class meeting, and the new requested courses, and are those core curriculum, are they collaborative, are they both, what's the projected enrollment, all of those things are taken into consideration, and anytime we added a new course. But the departments were the main subject matter experts in that area.
And so going from regionalization into restructuring, could you expand on what sort of the major concerns were there?
To the when we went to the regional model?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so when we went to the regional model, one kind of interesting thing that happened is that several of the regions actually decided to try and kind of build their own regional distance ed networks using similar technologies to what we were using for the NODE program, but funding it themselves. And another thing that became very popular was what they called point-to-point courses. So all of our NODE classes were multiple locations, usually anywhere from 5 to 10 campuses all participating in the same course. But what started becoming popular was what they would call a point-to-point class, where they would, just two campuses would decide, hey, I've only got 6 people in Chem 363 this fall, and they all need it to transfer to wherever, and the other campus would only have 5. So both of them collectively probably couldn't afford to teach a section to 5 or 6 students. So they'd say, hey, let's just pair up and use some of that, allocate some of that distance ed equipment to do just this point-to-point class between us two. So that was one of the things that popped up, it made it even sometimes more confusing, because then we were sometimes competing against those little regional models. But I think a lot of it was, I don't know if they saw the writing on the wall, because our enrollments kept going down and down and down, and they knew something was even bigger was going to happen, and they were trying to kind of protect their their local headcount, so to speak, versus, because the NODE program was a centrally funded initiative. So the FTE didn't always necessarily stay with the campus, where if they did their own little regional distance ed or point-to-point classes, the FTE stayed within their headcount. So I think there were many factors that changed how we still, carried on our curriculum development process as we always did right up till the very end, but the regionalization, I think that was probably the biggest effect that it had, is that it kind of spawned these little grassroots distance ed networks in the campuses that were in a big region. Now if you looked at like Barron County, for example, they were kind of way out on their own, and they ended up in the big restructuring, being paired up with Eau Claire. But geographically, Fox and Fond du Lac were doing things a lot as a small group. Marinette, Manitowoc, and Sheboygan ended up doing some things kind of as a little group. Waukesha and Washington County. So geographically, they kind of, started doing a little bit more of that. And that was for the last 2 or 3 years during the restructuring. That year we saw a lot more of that.
Could you expand on that? Like, other than geography, and then I guess also the financial benefits. Could you expand on what the benefits of doing that sort of model were?
Well, it gave the campuses a little bit more local control over it versus it being a centrally managed program. And it just also allowed for, one of the other things that's happened for years is, forever really, is that, there were adjunct faculty that would go back and forth between campuses and teach classes. So I think they kind of figured out like, hey, rather than having this person drive back and forth, maybe we'll just beam the class over, and then just have the people combined into one section. Dropping enrollments were a big thing too, because more and more they were finding that they were not able to offer classes locally. So that was a big driver for it too. Or just things that, like computer science, for example, that I think there were only, 3 tenure computer science faculty left towards the end of the restructuring. So if you have 13 campuses and only, you know, three computer science faculty, it's pretty difficult to offer computer science at the other 10 campuses. So, you know, a lot of these courses sprung out of just a necessity.
Yeah, so, and you mentioned that, could you sort of expand on continuing this sort of until the end of restructuring, sort of like how your responsibilities changed or didn't change after restructuring?
Well, I think, you know, the biggest change was the, you know, a little bit of the competition factor. So, like for local facilities, for example, these point-to-point classes that people were doing used the same facilities that we used for our courses. So if a campus decided they were going to do some of those, that reduced the availability of the classrooms for our program. So, and, you know, technically our program was supposed to get priority because we funded the facilities, but if a campus was in a particular situation where they really needed a class, you know, they were looking out for the best interest of the students to get them the classes that they needed. So, so that was kind of probably the biggest thing was just the competition against those types of courses. And then, you know, the big change to the reduced positions that happened during the main restructuring was a challenge too. So, you know, my job got harder just because the people that worked for me didn't have as much time to do their job. So it, you know, required me to pick up some of that slack at the administrative level. But I think, I mean, our goal never changed the whole time. You know, our goal was to supplement the associate's degree to the best of our ability and, you know, offer a curriculum that couldn't otherwise be offered. And that never changed. That, I mean, the whole 20 years that I've been here, either as a campus employee or a central employee, that was always our goal.
Yeah, could you expand on that? Sort of how do you see the mission of the former colleges in relation to your job?
So, yeah, the mission of the former colleges was always, in my eyes at least, that we were the institution of access and affordability, I guess, relative to comprehensives. And, that was the whole concept behind our program was to, you know, allow those campuses to, or supplement those campuses in their ability to do that, to keep the tuition low, to keep the class sizes, you know, decent, to help them develop the technologies that they needed to make the courses successful, to train the faculty, basically allow them to be to remain an institution of access. And so, you know, I'm not sure there, you know, there's still some of those things, some of those tenets are in place, but, you know, as the campuses now become branch campuses, I think in some cases that's not always the case anymore.
Can you expand on that?
Well, I think now some of the branch campuses are really becoming, you know, just truly that, an extension of their main campus. So I know that there are still, I believe, I don't know if it's legislative, but there's system policy in place that the tuition levels are still lower. And I think there's a sunset on that, but I think that you're seeing many of the four-year institutions, realizing that the situation of the really low enrollment still exists. So, you know, like the Marathon County campus, for example, I don't even know what the headcount is here anymore, but it's a lot less than it used to be. And the merger didn't change that, so the fact that you have some of the really small campuses like Manitowoc and Marinette and Richland Center with, only, a few hundred students, the merger didn't change the fact that there's still only a few hundred students there. So, which in turn means that there's not going to be as many faculty. So there's still a need for curriculum to get out to that campus via, some method other than a person standing in a classroom teaching the class. So I think I've already seen in many of these new institutions, similar kind of, regional distance ed networks popping up. And like, for example, here in Wausau, they still do a tremendous amount of those point-to-point classes between the Marshfield campus and the Wausau campus because they still just, they don't have the capacity to teach them locally. There's just not enough students. But I think that we lost there is no more institutional distance ed program, so to speak, like we used to have with the NOAA program. So there's nobody out there saying, hey, there's a need for, computer science 250 or whatever, I'm describing a number off the top of my head. There's no one collectively saying, hey, we got five people over in Wausau and six people up in Rice Lake and two people down in Janesville and one person over in Appleton that all need this class. And unless we do a collective, course, it's just not going to be taught. So that's one of my fears, is that ability to, share resources across multiple institutions might be dwindling a little as a result of our program not existing, well, and the college is not existing anymore.
Yeah, so that's sort of like the influence of the way that the colleges were structured on sort of how people communicated with each other.
Yeah, I would say that the restructuring in general, not the merger, but the college's regionalization, it was done, as a response to a big budget cut, and we had a big challenge ahead of us. But it was actually, once it was in place, it was actually working quite well. So it was a pretty successful transformation, and it did indeed, it reduced a lot of costs. But it still allowed us to deliver, pretty close to the same level of curriculum we had been. So it was fairly successful, I think. But then, of course, it went away completely.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts about, the timeline of that from regionalization into restructuring?
What do you mean as far as?
Just sort of like
how long did it actually take?
Yeah, just sort of like the succession of things.
So, gosh, I'd have to probably dig through some emails to find exact dates, but the restructuring, the regionalization of the UW colleges. It took at least a year to design and implement it. And then, the merger, it's still, I don't think, done. So there was, that was at least a 2-year process and probably longer because it's not finished. On paper, the colleges and extension don't exist anywhere, but there's still some pockets of legacy stuff that's being taken care of. So the beginning of the restructuring was the big budget cut. I think it was that was the 2013-14 fiscal year. It was the $250 million cut to the UW budget. And I don't remember what year that was, but that was really what triggered it.
It's a pretty massive amount of money.
It is. I mean, and that wasn't just to, that was to the entire UW system. So obviously, I don't know what our portion of that was, but that's how our cuts were calculated. What's our share of that cut? And then that was our goal.
Okay, let's see. Could you expand on, were you involved in either the steering committee or specific working groups related to distance learning during restructuring?
Yes, so many that I can't even remember all of them. So there were, there was a restructuring committee, and there were several subcommittees. So I was on several of them. There was an IT restructuring team, and I don't know what the name of it was, off the top of my head. But there were several working groups within the IT area, and I was on the main IT committee. I was also on the one for distance education and academic technology. And I think those were the two main ones. That was for the first, the restructuring. And then when the merger started, I was on just dozens of them, different each new, cohort of the merger had their own restructuring plan or merger plan. So Platteville had one that involved Richland Center and Baraboo. Stevens Point had one that involved Marshfield and Marathon County, and so on and so forth. And so each one of those, there was a the merger itself, there was a big system-wide oversight committee. I was not involved in that, but I was involved in everything from online program curriculum to distance ed to classroom technology, and almost every single one of the regional reorganizations. Mainly because my staff eventually became the staff of the branch campus, so they needed to know how we went about things in order to, accommodate all of the things that were going on at our campuses into their programs and their organizations.
Do you recall at all sort of like the communication with those universities or like the directives you were receiving?
Sure. Most of the committees that I was on, and they met virtually because there were people from many different locations. And the directive was really, how are they going to continue to offer, the same services that from the technology side of things that were, with the resources that they had there. And in most cases, that resource was just that 1.75 position. So, I was involved in some curriculum talk. But because our program was basically just, dissolved, there was no plan to transition the academics. It was all the technology and the facilities and the human resources. So all the work that I did on all of these transitional merger committees were focused around budget, human resources, and technology. The curriculum piece was basically just, that this program is going away, so it wasn't something we had to merge. Having said that, several of the comprehensives that were becoming, the overseers of branch campuses were interested in it because they knew that there was still going to be a need for that curriculum. And I was on a couple of different committees that talked about those issues too. But there was no mandate for us to merge any of the academic piece. Does that make sense?
Because I'm kind of, I don't know. I'm sure like the universities have their own priorities and structure that those
Yes,
branch
they do.
campuses,
And some are very, it really ran the gamut. There were institutions that, were very, very much interested in learning how our office operated so that they could continue to do some of those things. And there were others that just, we don't really have a need for this, so we're just not even going to talk about it. So there was a very wide range. And it's probably not too difficult to figure out that the ones that weren't too interested in offering distance ed were generally the larger institutions, just because, the bigger you are, the more resources you have locally. So, if you don't really have a need for distance ed or, geographical location, if you think about it, you'd be in Milwaukee, Waukesha and Washington County are, within the same, drivable distance. So for them, and in fact, Milwaukee actually, the structure of their, they beat, they, I think they actually combined Waukesha and Washington County into a new college within UW-Milwaukee. I think it's called the College of Liberal Studies or College of Liberal something. So they literally took both physical campuses and made them into one entity within UW-Milwaukee's structure. So they didn't become, part of, they didn't become like a direct branch where, they'll offer all of the curriculum that because that was a lot of the comprehensives wanted they envisioned the branch campus as being a true branch. So it's like, any degree you can get in Green Bay, we want you to be able to get it in Marinette and Manitowoc and Sheboygan. In fact, I think that was one of the chancellor's comments during the merger was that, we want each one of these branch campuses to be a true extension of our home campus, where you can, if not get every degree, but, most of them, where Waukesha and Washington, they basically decided we're going to create a whole new, College of Liberal Studies that's focused on, what the kind of like what the colleges used to do, being a freshman, sophomore, almost like a community college type college. And they figure that out on their own. Those two collectively have a dean, have a curriculum coordinator. So it was really, very, very diverse in how the academic piece played out.
Yeah, that's interesting that the geography too.
Correct. Now you have like a Barron County, they're all by themselves out in the middle of nowhere up in Rice Lake, and they're paired up with UW-Eau Claire, so it's like an hour and a half down the highway to get there. And so, the way that they're doing things is much differently than the way, the ones that are geographically pretty close to each other are doing things.
I guess that'll be something that we'll all just see how it changes over time.
Right. Yeah, the demographics don't change at all. So, there's certain realities that all of them still face, in that, enrollments are declining, and in some cases, these ranch campuses are getting down to, really, really, really small numbers. So, they have to do something in order to get the curriculum here, and, paying additional people to be here to teach those courses is just, it's not an option anymore. But some of the 4-years have their share of their financial problems too that they've got to deal with. So if they inherited a branch campus that's got financial issues, that two wrongs don't make a right. I guess no, two budget deficits don't make a surplus.
Unfortunately.
No. No, that was the other thing about the colleges is that for many years they operated on a, you know, a share, I guess, I don't know if it's really technically called a shared revenue model, but, you know, there was the ability to shift funds from place to place. In, you know, if someone had an up year and someone had a down year, there was the ability to move those pieces, you know, around a little bit since it was one institution. But now that, you know, that's not really the case anymore. That's all the financial burden rests solely on that comprehensive institution now.
Could you expand on that?
Well, just that, you know, that when the colleges was an institution, you know, each campus was, you know, there was a institutional budget and there were campus budgets, but there was a, you know, an institutional process to set those budgets. So a lot of the, you know, ways like within a comprehensive, you know, they have an institutional budget and then, you know, that budget's broken down by department versus campus. But now, you know, and being a large enough institution that there could be some sort of buffering of funds between campuses, that sort of goes away now because, you know, generally the 2-year campuses are much smaller. And so if you're a comprehensive and you have, you know, 2 branch campuses that have, you know, low enrollments, even if their enrollments go up as a percentage of your overall budget, it's really not that big of a change. If you're, you know, if you have 10,000 students at your main campus and you only have, you know, 300 at the branch campus, it's not really going to help you if the branch campus increases their enrollment by 10% because that's only 30 people. You know, and there's no tie across the campuses anymore. So it's, you know, basically now, like, you know, I'm here in Wausau, Stevens Point's responsible for everything that happens budget-wise at Marshfield and Wausau. And there's no, you know, UW system level vehicle to help buffer, you know, deficits, at least across the institution, as far as I know. Because, you know, we collectively at the colleges, we're one program, one degree, one course curriculum, you know, catalog.
The system is just, it's very different.
So, you know, like one of the things that happened during the restructuring as well is they, you know, they physically moved some people around. They had people that were teaching at campuses where the enrollment was going down, so they, you know, instead of taking drastic measures and laying people off, they would, you know, offer a person that was teaching at one of the smaller campuses the option to move to a bigger campus if there was a need. And that was all handled within one budget and one institution. So, like, I knew of a couple of people personally that taught in the Wausau area for many years, and they ended up going to Waukesha just because there was a need for the courses there, and there wasn't as much of a need here. So, just, you know, the size of the institution and the number of locations made it easier to, you know, be agile in making those changes. Where now, when you're a smaller entity, it's just not as easy. At least I don't think it is.
Yeah, that's kind of like there's maybe less room to experiment with things.
Although, I mean, I would say in general, you know, it was a mandatory thing, the merger, but, you know, I think just about every institution that I work with, you know, saw opportunities and approached it as a way to, you know, do positive work versus just, you know, throwing in the towel and saying, you know, just throwing up their hands.
Could you expand on that? Are these other people at the colleges?
Well, you know, there was a certain amount of attrition at every step along the road, where people don't like pay cuts, so the people are gonna find other opportunities, and I think we did lose some really good people just because of that. But you know, in general, I think that there was a good job was done to try to at least impress upon all of the comprehensives, the value of what the colleges was and what the colleges did. And I think you see some of that in, in some of the parameters that were set by system and the president's office to, keep the tuition low, for example. They wrote that in, that, these are institutions of access, and one of the functions of an institution of access is having lower tuition. So they, it was written into the plan that the tuition would stay lower for, I don't know the horizon on that, but and also they do still, in the most part, allow the branch campuses, as far as I know, some control over the curriculum itself. So it's not just, Stevens Point telling Wausau and Marshfield that you have to offer X, Y, and Z number of classes. They still have a local curriculum committee and a curriculum group, and I'm sure they have, many parameters they have to stay within, but they at least have input into what they're doing.
Right, yeah. And they have those local relationships, too.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So I guess the rest of these questions kind of been answered. Do you have anything that you think is important, or anything that you'd like to add?
I really don't. I guess I've been around, since almost 20 years. So I saw, the combination of colleges and extension, into one institution, and then, several budget cuts, and then the regionalization, and then the eventual, merger. And I know that, there were, back in, way before I was around, there were some changes. Not as significant, but I just hope that mission of that mission of access is something that is, if anything can be preserved, the concept of being accessible to local students, especially in the northern part of the state where it's underserved to begin with. And the, I think the colleges really always had a spirit of doing whatever it takes to get the students what they need. And so, I'm hopeful there are still a lot of people around that, remember that and will continue to keep that going forward. But, hopefully 15, 20 years from now, people will still remember that. And hopefully the campuses will still be here, because that's always been one of the rumors that's floated around, is that, they would eventually close some of the campuses if the enrollment got too small. So I hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Although, there may just come a point in time where it's just, not fiscally possible to keep all of them open anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting at this point.
The other thing that is kind of unknown to a lot of people is the relationship between the branch campuses or the previous college's campuses and the counties that they reside in, and even in some cases the cities. Like here in Wausau, the county owns all of the buildings.
Yeah.
That are on this campus. So, you know, there's a different dynamic than a comprehensive like Stevens. So Stevens Point, just 30 miles down the road, you know, everything that's on the Stevens Point campus is owned by the state. So they may not have as close of a relationship with the county government. And then like down in Marshfield, the city is actually a part owner of some of it too. So I think those are really important connections between the community and the institution, especially with the extension side of things.
Yeah, yeah. Adds another layer of investment into what happens, definitely.
Right. I mean, because in a lot of cases, it's the, you know, it's the only, especially in the northern part of the state, it's the only, you know, it's the only door to the university in town. And the counties know that, you know, so they spend a lot of money supporting the facilities to make sure that there's still that, you know, that open door for their students to get into the UW system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess potential economic investment as well.
Yeah, I mean, they build new buildings, and, you know, it costs a lot of money to maintain the existing facilities, all the infrastructure and, you know,
yeah.
Keeping the lights on, keeping the building clean.
Yep. Yeah.
All the systems that are in the building.
Yep.
So that, I guess that would be my hope, is that you know, that concept of access and connection to the local communities is, you know, is the most important thing in my mind anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.